The dead man had such little give to him that Yakima half expected his arms to break clean off. As he straightened with the dead man in his arms, Yakima backed into the shed, looking behind him so he wouldn't stumble over the scrap lumber littering the floor. Coffin lids and half-finished furniture pieces of several shapes and sizes leaned against the walls, and four coffins in various phases of completion were stacked together in a corner. Odds and ends of lumber lay everywhere, and the tools and sawdust littered shelves on every wall. The heady smell of pine hung thick in the cold air, as did smoke from the heating stove. A sealed coffin stretched across sawhorses against the long, low building's right wall, under a snowy, frosty window. Another was just beyond it.
That one back there!
Elkhart jerked his chin toward the coffin leaning up against the rear wall, near the bullet-shaped black stove that ticked and breathed like a napping dragon.
I was saving it for Ed Sorensen, as he's expected to go any day now, but I got four more ready to go. This time of year, cold being so hard on the old folks and the babies, they go fast.
Yakima was halfway across the deep room when hooves clomped dully in the snowy street. He looked beyond the undertaker to see a wagon drawn by a stout, shaggy, dun mule pull up in front of the open doors. A blocky man in a dark blue wool coat and cloth-billed watch cap sat in the driver's box, his breath steaming in front of him, freezing in his thick, dark red mustache.
Oh, hell.
Elkhart glanced over his shoulder.
Let's set him down for a moment. This gent's come for the whore.
Yakima hadn't seen the lidded coffin to his right. Now, as the undertaker lowered Cisco's legs, swinging them toward the coffin, Yakima had no choice but to do likewise with the man's shoulders. When they had the frozen body on the coffin, Elkhart ambled back toward the front of the shop, hiking a shoulder and canting his head to one side, as though to stretch kinks from strained muscles. The man in the wagon was wrapping his reins around the brake handle.
Mr. Barstow, I was expecting you yesterday.
The man in the wagon turned toward the shop. His face was ruddy and thick-mustached.
You were in such a hurry to fetch your daughter that I rushed to get her ready for you yesterday. Then you didn't show up.
The newcomer climbed stiffly down the far side of the wagon and came shambling around the rear of the box, his high-topped lace-up boots crunching in the packed snow fronting the shop.
I had business.
Barstow stopped to reach over the wagon's tailgate, unlatching it with a wooden bark.
Yeah, I heard about your business. Heard you had a couple of buckets of beer over to the Blue Spruce, sang a couple of songs and wrote Sickie's Woman, and took a long nap above their cabin. Night-long nap.
She's ready to go? I gotta get started. I got a long pull ahead.
She been ready, Mr. Barstow.
As Yakima stood warming his back at the chuffing stove at the rear of the shop, he watched the undertaker lead the Honyonker Barstow into the shop and over to the coffin, stretched across sawhorses under the shack's sole window. The undertaker set his hand atop the lid.
Here she is, dressed just like you wanted.
Barstow stood facing the coffin, his broad shoulders sloping, his arms hanging straight down to his sides. Deerskin mitted hands resting against his thighs, clad in coarse wool trousers. He didn't say anything, and neither did the undertaker, their frosty breaths mingling in the twilight of the shop as it faded above their heads. The undertaker glanced several times at Barstow, curiously, impatiently, until Barstow set a fist on the lid.
Okay, let's see her.
The undertaker turned his head toward Barstow.
You sure you want to do that? Look, I'll be straight up with you. I couldn't get her eyes to close all the way. Now that's a little unsettling for some folks, so what I did was...
Open the lid, Elkhart. I want to see my daughter. Make sure you put her in the dress I gave you.
I put her in the damn dress.
I want to see.
All right, all right. Have it your way, Barstow. Not exactly the trusting sort, are you?
Elkhart reached across the coffin and lifted the lid. He leaned the lid against a half-finished dresser behind him, then turned back to the coffin, and he and Barstow stared into the box. There was a 3-foot gap between the men, and through this, Yakima could see the lower face of a young girl. A waxy, fine-featured face frozen in death's repose. As the Undertaker shifted his weight around nervously, Yakima saw the blue polka-dotted bandana that had been wrapped around the girl's head, holding a penny over each eyeball.
Now see, I couldn't keep her eyes closed. You said your trip would take you a few days. You're hauling her down to Rolette. You keep those pennies tied down on her eyes. By the time you get to Rolette, they should stay closed on their own. And your wife can see her before you put her in the ground.
Barstow shambled a little closer to the casket. Elkhart backed up some, as though to give the man a little privacy. Barstow rested his hands on the sides of the freshly planed box from which slivers of wood curled, and Yakima could see the man's lips slide back away from his teeth as he made a face.
Sorry, Barstow. She was a good girl. Everybody liked around here.
Barstow turned his head toward the Undertaker. Yakima saw the hard brown orbs of his eyes darken a little as the skin above the man's nose wrinkled.
Did you lay with her, Elkhart?
No. I'm a married man. My wife wouldn't put up with me cavorting with working girls. Of course I haven't laid with her. And I'm insulted that you asked me such a question.
Barstow studied the Undertaker for a time, and then the muscles in his rugged face softened, and he turned back to his daughter in the casket, nodding.
Okay, then. I'll take her home. I'll get some food for the trail and such, and I'll take her home. That's where she belongs. That was where she always belonged anyway. Not here, cavorting, like you say.
Barstow turned to stare out between the open timber doors, where the winter light was gradually intensifying and a light snow was falling. When Elkhart had set the lid on the coffin, he hammered the 6 nails that had been only half driven through the wood, sealing it. While he did this, Barstow stared outside, but Yakima couldn't see what the man was looking at. Yakima didn't know what he was thinking, but he could feel the man's sadness. When Elkhart pounded the last nail into the coffin lid, he glanced at Yakima.
Hey, Breed, help Mr. Barstow with his daughter, will you? If I do any more heavy lifting this morning, I'm going to be down all afternoon. Won't get a damn thing done.
Yakima glared at Elkhart. The casual way in which the Undertaker was trying to order him around layered the gloominess he'd felt at Barstow's plight with a keen edge of anger. Resisting the urge to backhand the Undertaker, Yakima took one end of the coffin. Barstow tossed some coins on an unfinished coffin lid.
Thanks, Barstow.
And as Elkhart swept the coins into a palm, jingling them with satisfaction, Barstow took the other end of his daughter's coffin back toward the door. When they were outside, the yellow dog came up to sniff around the coffin. Barstow set his end of the box on the wagon, and then Yakima shoved it up against the front panel and the driver's boot. Barstow raised the tailgate and latched it. Without so much as a glance at Yakima, or another word to Elkhart, now standing between the shed's open doors, he tramped around the front of the wagon, climbed aboard, and released the brake. He swung the shaggy dun mule around and clomped off the way he'd come, the falling snow obscuring a coffin-laden buckboard like a beaded white curtain. Yakima stared after him.
Have a safe trip home, Barstow! That son of a bitch.
Barstow pulled his wagon up to the narrow street's right side and stopped in front of a log shack with a high porch and a sign announcing simply 5-cent beer.
Look at him. Going to get him another bucket of beer.
I reckon I'd have a couple buckets of beer if I'd come to town to retrieve my dead daughter.
Shit. A man like that don't throw money around unless he has it.
Yakima frowned at the hawk-nosed Undertaker.
Huh?
She told him where the money was hid. The loot Pedro Camargo stole from the bank in Juniper Bend.
How could she tell him?
She didn't die until after the old man got here.
He was with her for 2 hours at Ma's before the poor girl expired. The doctor tried to get the bullet out, but it was too close to her heart. Probably shouldn't have tried. She'd probably be on her back and spreading her legs again by now if the doc had left her alone.
Elkhart turned back toward where Barstow was tramping up the cantina's steps, heavy-footed, kicking snow from his boots.
Sure enough, she told him where she headed when old Pedro got hauled off to the ooze gal.
If the girl got rich off her boyfriend's stolen loot, why in the hell would she be spending the winter in Crystal Creek?
Pedro just got himself greased last month. I imagine she was waiting for spring to light out with stash. I'll guarantee you, Breed. She didn't dare go dig it up before Pedro was snuggling with snakes. Pedro weren't the sort of fella you double-crossed, even if he was locked up. Hell, we all figured he'd have busted out by now and come back for the loot himself.
The Undertaker stared toward the tavern into which Barstow had disappeared.
Sure, she told her old man. Who the hell else would she tell?
He turned to Yakima.
Come on. Help me get old Cisco in a box, will you?
Yakima scooped the toboggan's rope out of the snow and began tramping back through the snowy village, the toboggan singing along behind him.
I don't think so, Elkhart. I've had all I can take of you on an empty stomach.